This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. And of course, Sirius XM Channel 158, Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Heyo.
In the hizzy. What's happening, man?
Not much. Good morning. Good Monday to everyone.
To everyone. To everyone and all.
Mm-hmm.
That's redundant. On the show today,
everyone and all.
Greg Peterson joins us, all his baseball plays today. We'll reduce it to five or thereabouts. He's got so many, but we'll do the Fab Five with Greg Peterson. Wes Reynolds joining us, Adam Burke, all his baseball plays as well. Wes on golf and more. He's got some NBA thoughts for the NBA Finals between the Spurs and the Knicks. Let's go. Spurs getting it done on Saturday. We'll talk about that here momentarily. Speaking of the NBA Finals and the French Open, by the way, Alex Noops Christensen joins us today. How do you get the nickname Noops? Do we know?
It's a great question. I don't know.
That'll be the first question.
There you go.
How you get the nickname Noops? But we'll talk hoops and tennis with him. Maybe there's a lesson somewhere in there. We'll also look at some rando markets, like where will Giannis end up next? Where will LeBron end up next? That kind of thing.
Well, there's a couple conference finalists that have been bounced that everybody's asking those questions, Gil.
Well, we got to talk about this. French Open plays, by the way. There are two left. Two have not started today. French Open match play has been great. Futures, not so much. Up 9 units on match play. Down 3 on all 3 of our futures, though, including Iga, who just was terrible the other day, against Marta Kostyuk, who I added a future on, by the way. Marta Kostyuk, yep, to win the ladies' side of the French Open. But today what remains is Maddie Keys in action right now. It is not going well for her in the third set. She's down a break. The two that remain, I am on Francis Tiafoe and on Alejandro Tabilo. Tiafoe and Tabilo. That won't be hard to remember. Tabilo is a bit of a dog. Tabilo, when I bet it overnight for VSiN subscribers, plus 148 versus your guy, Felix Auger-Aliassime, and Francis Tiafoe minus 113 against Matteo Arnaldi. Those are the two tennis that have not started yet today if you want to partake. As far as Saturday, oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I did partake. Okay. I'm on a big foe with you, Tiafoe.
You love big
foe. I do like Tiafoe. Against a Matteo Arnaldi? Sure, let's go. Let's go, Tiago.
Sure, he said. Plus, we'll look at, we'll get May final in Major League Baseball. We have all the standings, all the odds, all that. Our Mariners ended up finishing 4 wins out. That's it in the end. Too little, too late. 6-game winning streak there at the end. 4 wins out.
I was just going to pull it up. Yeah, quite a run to end the month there.
We're never in it. Didn't manifest as soon as we'd like to. So we'll get into all that as well. Let's start with Saturday night, though, and we'll talk about other things that happened over the weekend. I know we're a day plus removed, but the San Antonio Spurs and those of us who have tickets on the Spurs alive and well and are the favorites to beat the New York Knicks in the NBA Finals, which begin Wednesday night. Stanley Cup Final begins Tuesday between Vegas and Carolina. NBA Finals begins Wednesday. Proper singular and pluralization on my part. Thank
well
you very much.
Done. Yep.
Not too bad of a wait in between. So the content works out. Spurs and Thunder went the distance. So game 7 in OKC. Remember, there was no J-Dub. There was no A.J. Mitchell. Spurs led by 14 in the first quarter, Kelly. 27-13. But then a 12-5 OKC run to close it out. Spurs led by 7 at the end of 1. Spurs got it back to 11. Then OKC went on a 20-5 run to take the lead 53-49, but a 7-0 run to close out the half. Spurs were up by 3, 56-53. I don't know if you know about this baloncesto, but it's a game of runs.
I've heard that.
Yeah, third quarter, 10-4 run to start the half for the Thunder. They took a 63-60 lead, and everybody's like, okay, here comes OKC. They're going to do this. But a 16-2 San Antonio run put the Spurs back up by 11, 76-65. Then what do you know? OKC, a 12-3 stretch to cut it to 79-77, 80-77 Spurs, same margin, 3 points, end of third quarter as it was at the half. And the fourth quarter, 81-79, a 16-7 San Antonio run sparked by a couple Keldon Johnson threes. They go up 97-86, punctuated, by the way, by a Wemby step-back three at the end of that and a Johnson layup. With 8 minutes left, the Spurs are up 11. Then it's 97-91. It's a 6-point margin. And now Wemby has 5 fouls.
Yeah.
Wemby has 5 fouls. He sits out briefly. And this is the play that everybody sort of highlights as the key play of the game. With Wemby out, OKC gets a steal. They're down 6. Hartenstein to the rack. Cornette blocks it.
That's awesome.
Castle jumper on the other end, 99-91. Turnover, Wemby back in, Champagne 3. And all of a sudden, it's 11 again with 5:33 left.
So happy for Cornette, man, just for to make that play, because Gil, he's been one of those guys that's kind of, I don't want to say been getting killed, but he's kind of, you know, we keep seeing all these Wemby on-off stats, right? But, you know, and all that, it's great. It's really how good Wemby is. But, like they went out to get him to be a great backup rim defender like he was in Boston for the past couple years. And to make a highlight play like that when you've been kind of been getting dogged throughout the playoffs, that was great to see.
It was great to see. Caruso Banker made it 102-93. Spurs turnover. McCain misses. Champagne misses a 3, but Harper cleans it up with an offensive board. Put back. OKC uses their final timeout with 4:26 to go. They're down 11. Then SGA with an impossible fadeaway jumper. Timeout Spurs. 104-95 left. 104-95, 405 left. Pardon me. Harper, 3. That was the dagger. 107-95. Mm-hmm. Wallace quarter 3 to match it. 107-98. Teams trade empty possessions. 2:31 left. Harper dunk drive blocked by Holmgren. We'll get to him momentarily. A Wallace 3 cut it back to 6 with less than 2 minutes left. And then the Spurs turned it over. Remember, OKC had the ball down 6. Less than 2 minutes left. They missed out of bounds. 1:23 to go. Champagne missed. Rebound Castle. He lays it in. Wallace layup. 109-103. Spurs call timeout with 42.9 seconds left as Castle was trapped. 14 seconds left on the shot clock. OKC steal, inbounds pass. Remember, OKC had a shot here. Kenrick Williams missed the 3. Spurs with a foul to give. They foul. Caruso 3, no good. Out of bounds off the Thunder. 17 seconds left. Wallace misses a 3. Vassell breakaway jam. The unders go to die on the breakaway jam.
Oh, man.
The over hits. 111-103. Ball game. The Spurs are going to the NBA Finals. Wembanyama, if I'm a Spurs backer, which I am at 19-1 to win the title, I wish he wasn't that emotional. I was like, there's one more series, buddy.
Yeah.
I get
yeah.
it. But Wembanyama, 22. So that's a quibble. 22.7 boards. Champagne, 20 on 6 of 11, shooting 6 of 10 from behind the arc. SGA, 35 in defeat. Holmgren, and this is the one I want to seize on, 4 points on 1 of 2 shooting. 2 shots, Gelly. With 4 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, 2 turnovers in 32 minutes. Both of his shots came in the Thunder's first 4 possessions of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then he didn't take a shot for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the Spurs and the Knicks, let's talk about the Thunder for a second.
Sure. He was bad all series.
He was really bad in Game 7. And both Holmgren and SGA, right, at different moments, which was not covered in that little recap, what was not covered is SGA, there was a couple times where he should have taken it at Wemby and he shied away
mm-hmm.
and he passed it out. And then Holmgren, every time he had it, remember that one awkward one where he just fell on the baseline?
Yeah.
He's going to the hoop, he just falls. I just thought those two guys, the biggest stars on that team, SGA and Holmgren, without question, came up so small. Or is it just the fact that Wemby is just that menacing of a force on defense, and that's just how it's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, look, he caused problems for those guys the whole series, Wemby. That was SGA, I think more early in the series. I thought SGA had a great game in Game 7. 35
wasn't
points,
his fault.
12 for 21 from the field. To me, it was more the story of the others on both sides, right? We've talked about for years now, hey, it's SGA, but he's got this supporting cast that is so great. And, yeah, you had the injuries, J-Dub, A.J. Mitchell. Second best player, and A.J. Mitchell has become very, very, very good for this team. But still, we've always talked about how these other guys are so good on this team and step up. And I thought Shea had a better game than Victor Wembanyama. I thought he was the best player on the court on Saturday. But it was all about the other guys on both sides. The Spurs others were the guys who stepped up and won that Game 7. And meanwhile, you look at, I mean, you know, some like me will bet Alex Caruso MVP tickets. 3 for 14 from the field. He couldn't hit anything, right? Lou Dort was a mess the whole series. Chet Holmgren was a mess the whole series. And I know he's getting destroyed after this game. It's just those other guys were not there. They just weren't not there.
You're 100% right. maybe I'm not being fair to SGA by pointing out those moments where that he shied away. But you're right. It wasn't his fault. It was. I really do think the J-Dub injury was, in the end, proved massive. Proved to be massive.
And
because
know,
they couldn't. They don't have anybody else who could generate offense or be relied on.
Right. And Mitchell even developed into that role this year. But it's especially the creator. Right. You always have these 3-and-D guys. But who can actually go create their own shot? And that's where they ran out of options. It was, man, I just thought really impressed. Like, this is, I don't want to take anything away from the Spurs, though, right? Like, Victor, and I agree with you, the getting emotional thing, a little too much for me. But all we keep saying about this guy, what I love about him the most is he cares about being great.
Don't twist what I'm saying. I love the emotion. I love it in general. But as a ticket holder.
Right. Conference finals, not the finals. Yeah.
Right. As a bettor, I was like, okay, I just hope that doesn't signify that he feels this is the mountaintop. Right. I love that he cares so much. I love that he slayed the beast here. I love all of that. But I'm just like, okay, now you do have another series. Let's ratchet it back a little bit.
And look, as we spin this forward and talk about game one, is that in my mind a little bit? For sure. Right. Like, are you going to be able to get past this? You got to the mountaintop, right? You got over Oklahoma City. This isn't where it ends, though.
This is what it is for last. We'll get to the Spurs and the Knicks after the break. But OKC, this does now sort of push it forward to the draft now, and all of that draft capital they have. It's like they are going to meet this defeat with a vengeance.
I think it's
with aggression.
Very fascinating what happens. And with Chet, I'd love to talk more about him on the other side. He's a fascinating story.
Are people
right now
ridiculous for saying he's expendable now?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they are too. Because I heard a little of that. I'm like, okay, well, let's ratchet that back a bit. Spurs, Knicks, next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget about the sharp plays, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting info, and alerts directly from the pros. Check out sharpplays.com. Scan the QR code for more. Don't put the word the beforehand. It's just sharpplays.com. Maddie Keys got bageled in the third set against Deanna Schneider. That's not fun. Not a fun loss to start the day with. As the match play has been awesome for us. Let's see if we can get one or two of these men's plays. Again, Tabilo and Tiafo still to come. We at TweetSpeed in the book, Jesse Welch. I was just listening to Friday's ANG, and it made me look into the Fonseca-Djokovic match, and golly, that must have been a hell of a watch, huh? we got a first golly. Was it golly or is it golly? I don't know how I meant it. Yeah, that was unbelievable. One of many unbelievable matches. You see the Fonseca Rude match yesterday? Mm-hmm. This is the other thing. Did you see this with the lack of Hawkeye being involved? Casper Rude was down a set. He wins the second set because Fonseca hits one long. But someone shouted in the audience, right? So Rude didn't play it. The ump comes to see where the ball was. She determines that it was in. They play on. Fonseca wins the set a couple points later. Hawkeye shows that the ball was out. The players don't get to see that, Hawkeye. They got to get rid of it. It changed the entire match. You have no idea if Rude could. 1-1 in a marathon like that versus 2-0 in sets is like a seismic gulf.
What's the reasoning at this point? Tradition?
At this point, it's just tradition. We've always done it this way. We'll continue to do it this way.
Yeah, like, tennis was always doing it that way.
It honestly made you not want to watch anymore. Michael LaFond, let's hope it's a sweep so my favorite radio show, A Numbers Game, stops talking about NBA, the worst league ever. Sorry, Michael LaFond, it's kind of a thing. JD in Florida, what's left of the men's draw is nuts. Just throw a dart at the stage. Stanley Cup bet is placed to end in 6 games, +210. Also, huge college softball matchup at noon Eastern, Texas, Tennessee. There you go. Spence, my college baseball betting strategy is to pull a Costanza and bet opposite the college baseball pros. I don't know who the pros you're referring to are. Tim Bowers, I'm no NBA hardo, but it seems like the Knicks didn't have to face a good defensive team in the playoffs yet. Agree. Norman Vegas, FYI, Channel 13 now off the air on DirecTV due to contract dispute with Scripps. No NHL or NBA. Time to get out the antenna. Oh, man. Breaking out the antenna. Greg Peterson joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, to talk some baseball with us. He, of course, can be found on Twitter at GUnit_81. His tribute to Anquan Boldin. Greg joins us now from somewhere in the desert. Greg, how you doing, man?
And by somewhere in the desert, you mean Henderson, Nevada. I'm doing great. How about you?
That's correct. Henderson, Nevada, where moments from now, you will be, once you get off with us, you will be embarking on your daily, and I mean daily, 12-mile run. How many days in a row for the run?
We have been in Las Vegas. It's going to be 9 years in 2 weeks from now.
Maybe
17 days, and I've pretty much made it every single day, so we're going on about 9 years.
Okay, how many days off would you say you've had in those 9 years? How many? One? Two?
Last time I had a day off was about 8.5 years ago.
Wow. This kid's amazing.
We've had this conversation before. You haven't gotten sick, you haven't twisted an ankle, you haven't made a flight.
What if you have a flight? Yeah, you go on a run that day?
I just get it in at midnight before the flight, which is typically about 5 a.m., and then I just rest and recover on the flight.
Rest and recover on the flight. How's the dating life going, Greg? Before we get to your baseball picks, how's the dating life? What's happening?
Well, I went on a first date about a week or so ago, and I decided I do not want a second date in this adventure. So I decided, you know what, we are going to go back to the drawing board.
Oh, what happened that made you say, I don't want any more of this? What happened?
It was not good. It was not good. I will leave it at that. It was not good.
On site or during conversation?
Before the conversation, even. When you are told, oh, pick me up here, and you're sent 20 minutes away from the place where you're supposed to pick the person up, you know that it's not going to be good.
That's it. Greg's out. It's been inconvenienced.
And then it somehow got worse. got worse.
Did you say anything? Did you say, boy, that was a little out of the way. Did you say anything to her or no? You just kept your mouth shut?
Well, what happened was she tried to sleep in my car. It was that bad. So, yeah.
What do you mean? Before, like after?
Follow
what do you mean?
After.
After. Oh, yeah. What did you say? Like, get out of my car?
Not great.
Okay. Say no more. We'll let that lie till the next time. We got baseball to talk about. That's okay. Thank you. That was pretty interesting. All right. Royals and Reds. You have a total play in this one today.
Absolutely. And hopefully the bats will be asleep for this one because I'm in on the under. And boy, the Royals have been rough this year with their offense. Away from home, they're averaging about 3.2 runs per game. That out of 30 teams is 30th in all of baseball. And Trace Burns has been amazing. He's got a sub-2 ERA. Recognize that the fielding independent is a little bit higher than that, but he's given up one home run, 10.1 strikeouts per 9 innings. And for the Reds, they've been able to get some reinforcements in the lineup, like what I've seen out of J.J. Bleda, the back-end Eugenio Suarez, because it felt like Ellie De La Cruz, along with Sal Seward, were really carrying the mail for this team. But I also think that the Reds might see a little bit of positivity with this bullpen. One of the most stark things I've seen all season long, the Reds were leading the league in bullpen ERA in the first month or so of the season, and currently they're a bottom five team in terms of bullpen ERA. It has went straight down the toilet bowl since about the first 4 or so weeks of the season. I think that they can get back online here against a Royals team that is going to throw on their Lewinder Avila as their starter. For Avila, he hasn't really done a lot of starting. He's been mostly coming out of the bullpen, but with his 5 ERA, closer to 3.46 or so fielding independent, I do think that there's a little bit of positivity doing for him. So right now, seeing 9 to 8.5, whether you've got an 8.5 or a 9, do like the under. And for the Reds, I did side with them on the run line, though. I'm now seeing this right around -120. That is just getting to a little bit of a point of no return for me.
All right, the Giants are at the Brewers tonight. Explain this one to me, Greg. It's Kyle Harrison, Cy Young candidate, former Giant, by the way, now a Cy Young candidate. Brewers are only -144 against the no-account Giants, despite them vomiting up 19 runs yesterday at Coors. And the Brewers, our May champions, everybody, which we'll talk about later. Brewers -144, too good to be true, that line?
That's because you're probably going to be getting Shane Drown in the start. It looks like Kyle Harrison is going to be pushed back to Tuesday. The Brewers have been dealing with a few ailments. They were supposed to be getting back Quinn Priester this week. Quinn Priester's rehab has not been going great, to say the least, but I'm willing to bet on Shane Drown here. Like with Drown, he's mostly been coming out of the bullpen. He's yet to go more than 4 1/3 innings thus far this season, but he's backed up by a bullpen that is in the top 8 in terms of ERA. Drown himself has been able to give you a sub-3 ERA, and for the Giants, they entered into Sunday dead second last in terms of run creation. They scored 19 runs against the Rockies, which is great, but now you have to go from elevation back down to sea level. That oftentimes throws off a lot of teams, and the one thing for the Giants is that Landon Roop has been in a bright spot for them. Sub-3.35 ERA, 2.65 fielding, dependent, 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, but as we know with the Brewers, they don't rely upon the deep ball to be able to develop offense. Out of 30 teams, they are 30th in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis. Think that they get to Roop. Think that the just wholesale approach for the Brewers gets a job done here in a lower scoring game. Like the Brewers on the money line, right around minus 140, minus 145 is where I'm finding that to go along with that 7.5 under.
Rangers Cardinals, 2011 World Series revenge spot for the Rangers. Cardinals are a slight dog. What do you like here?
The David Freese World Series, that's by right. The way. And I do like the Rangers here on the money line because with St. Louis, they're coming off of Sunday Night Baseball. Absolutely took it to Jordan Wicks. They didn't score after the third inning, but they didn't need to. But got a guy in Jacob DeGrom who, I mean, we all know Jacob DeGrom as a strikeout guy and a rock-solid pitcher. He's uncharacteristically giving up 2 home runs per 9 innings. Do you think that he finds it a little bit more here against the Cardinals team that going into the day on Sunday Night Baseball, they were only averaging about 3.95 runs per game at home. That's a bottom six mark in all of baseball. Rangers have been much better with their offense when they've been away from home rather than at home. I don't think a lot of people realize how much Arlington suppresses offense. Think that the Rangers find it here, and I just love fading teams coming off of Sunday Night Baseball. So right around minus 120, minus 125, took a shot on the Rangers on the money line.
All right, you are not required to watch this baseball game, but Greg has a play on it. Rockies at the Angels.
Yep, if you don't want to watch this game, I do not blame you. You probably really love baseball, and I do love baseball. I do like the under here. Jose Soriano has been really good for the LA Angels. Sub-3 ERAs, getting 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. Rockies, as we know, some of the biggest home and road splits in all of baseball. Kyle Freeland has been a train wreck, giving up 2.5 home runs per 9 innings, 8 ERA. Angels, though, they're averaging 3.4 runs per game at home, second worst in all of baseball. So I think that they're going to have a rough go, but I think that Freeland, who throughout his career has been a much better pitcher than what he's shown this year, finds positivity. I took a shot on the Rockies on the money line at plus 180, and I do like that total to the under.
All right, and one more to boot, the red-hot Mariners. You got them versus the Mets today?
Yep, and the Mets are not white hot, to say the least. Chamonix is going to be thrown as a bulk guy. Austin Warren is going to be the opener here for the Mariners. Emerson Hancock has been one of the better, shall we say, stories in all of baseball. For Manaea, who's going to be the bulk guy, he is getting about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, but command issues with 4 walks per 9 innings. Mets offense has not been able to get online. Do like the Mariners with the Mets having to go from east to west to get the job done here on the money line, right around about minus 135.
There you go. Mariners winners of 6 in a row. Greg, thank you. Good luck with the dates moving forward. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Greg Peterson, everybody. Coming back with more baseball.
This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, SiriusXM Channel 158. Ever you're taking us in? I am very grateful. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We are in studio here. We have a TV on that has the French Open coverage from TNT, hosted by Lefko, your boy.
I like his jackets.
Sam Querrey, John Isner, former United States top 20 players.
John Isner looks like he's ready to sell insurance somewhere in middle America.
He will serve Bocce to death. The lovely Sloane Stephens, the disappearing Carolyn Wozniacki. And then Flavio Cobolli is on set, and Kelly is falling in love.
Yeah, I mean, just the eyes, man. Just deep blue eyes, like a beautiful ocean.
It's like beautiful.
Like the warm waters of Tahiti.
We were just talking off air with Alex Christensen, who's about to join us. Tennis players are a good-looking bunch, yeah. Generally speaking. Tennis players and quarterbacks. Got to be a societal reason for that. Uncle Bush, worst night, Chet Holmgren game 7 or Greg Peterson's last blind date? Gadzooks, he says. Super jerk.
Chuck got paid for his, at least.
Super Jerk chimed back and he said, forget about it. He probably ran 36 miles after that date anyway. Chance Copperpot about his Cowboys skins parlay with the Spurs winning the championship. He goes, I know Kelly says I was drinking, but really I was just already betting the live field goal prop. I was angry the Spurs were down to 20-1 that day. Cowboys have Aubrey, and I could tell they weren't getting very far on that specific drive. So I says to myself, why not marry those two? Got himself an 88-1 on the Spurs now. Matthew Mayberry, of course I had the Brewers for April and the Braves for May. Oh, are you kidding me, Matthew?
Oof.
Oh, but I did get Russell Henry in the back door yesterday. Hey, watch how you say that, man. I'm going to the Memorial Tournament this weekend. Looking forward to the Long Shots pod this week. There you go. And touchdown, Jesus. There was enough pressing of the conversation until Greg got away with, then she tried to sleep in my car. I was trying to get out of it at that point.
I was sitting here like, all right, time to move on. Okay, wait, I've got 17 questions now.
And Joe, I love the show, gents. Thanks for getting me through. Oh, I already read it. We already read that one. Sorry. This is from Brendan. Oh, see, I like Brendan coming back with this. He goes, I love slow playing the football season. Let's enjoy the other sports. One of the reasons I like this show. Thank you very much. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, his name is Noops. That's his nickname. We'll get to the origin of that momentarily. I'm going to call him Alex. It's Alex Christensen who joins us now. He's an analyst for BetUS, an FTN contributor. You can follow him on Twitter at _Noops. He joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Talk a little NBA, talk a little tennis. How you doing, Alex? Good morning to you. Thanks for doing this.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's one of the best times of the year. I love the NBA. I love tennis. We got the French Open going. The NBA Finals are starting. It's one of the peaks of my season.
How did we get the name Noops?
Well, you might notice, Gil, that Noops is actually just spoon backwards. And growing up as a Philadelphia 76ers fan, unfortunately, my favorite player until Allen Iverson was drafted was Clarence Weatherspoon.
Yes.
I used to wear a Clarence Weatherspoon jersey around quite a bit, picked up the nickname Noops as a result of that. And then one night in college, my friend Gordon decided he was sick of the three of us being referred to as Gordon, Brian, and Spoon, and we became Nodrog, Nareb, and Noops. So... that's kind of how we landed here.
Wow. Great answer. Washington Bullets great Clarence Weatherspoon. That's how we got him.
Creative roommate right there. Wow.
That's a good Immaculate Grig basketball one. Sixers Bullets. There you go. Little Clarence Weatherspoon. All right. Before we go to basketball and your NBA finals thoughts, you have any tennis left for the day, sir?
Yeah, just one bet for me here on the women's side. Men's matches all look pretty solid to me, but Aryna Sabalenka is going to go up against Naomi Osaka in a match that would have been much more exciting a couple of years ago, and probably on a different surface. Here at Roland Garros on these slow clay courts, even before considering kind of the performance of each tournament to date, I have Sabalenka an absolutely gigantic favorite in this match. I'm seeing the spread around 4.5. I would have this a little bit closer to 5. And that's before considering the fact that Osaka has been kind of average here so far in this tournament. Struggled to beat Laura Siegmund, a veteran there in the first round. Really took some lumps from Donna Vekic, someone who's not a great clay player. And then he did 3 sets to beat Iva Jovic in the last round, where Sabalenka has just been cruising. She is so comfortable here. Her power translates really nicely here. I think under 20.5 games is perfectly fine. But give me Sabalenka -4.5. It's a little bit juicy, but anything -125 or better, which you should be able to find, is a good bet.
I do not have a bet on that match, but directionally speaking, I am with you on that. I think... they try to market this as, Sabalenka, Osaka. I don't think it's as close as the marketing would have you believe. Let's get to the NBA Finals, which tips off Wednesday night in San Antonio. The Spurs and the Knicks, the NBA Cup revenge game, if you will. Revenge series, if you will, after the Knicks took down the Spurs. Knicks won that game, right? I can't even remember.
Yeah, Knicks won that game.
Yeah, so it's revenge for the Spurs. Let's talk about the series in whole. The Knicks are consensus a +170 series dog. You like that. You're betting that.
Yeah, I have this series a lot closer, and I was kind of surprised coming into the playoffs. I really didn't have a lot of respect for the Knicks because I think one of the hardest things handicapping the NBA is seeing the potential of a team and then trying to parse that with what the team has actually done. And you look at this Knicks team in the regular season, not one of the best teams in the league. Very, very good. You know, top 10 in both offense and defense, but never mentioned in the same breath as San Antonio or Oklahoma City or even Boston for a little while when we were maybe a little bit too high on them, or Denver when they were healthy and we were a little too high on them. But you look at the way that they've problem solved their way through this playoffs, the way that Michael Bridges seems to overnight have turned back into the player that they thought they were acquiring and they were trading him. Finally seeing Mike Brown really put together the idea that when we're trying to run this offense, the second option really shouldn't be Bridges. It really shouldn't be Ananobi. It should be Towns. We need to be running a lot more through them. So when I start to consider kind of this version of the Knicks, and I realize also that, you know, the Knicks, one of their big challenges here, they're playing the best team they've played all postseason. The Spurs are better than anyone the Knicks have faced. But in the playoffs, it's chess. It comes down to being able to answer questions as they're being asked. Now, the Knicks have Brunson and Cat, and that's been tough for them to manage on defense, but they know that. They've spent all season sort of working around that, and Towns' defense really takes a step in the playoffs. Where I'm concerned from a Spurs perspective is offensively, I'm really curious to see what San Antonio is going to do. Wembanyama struggled a little bit in some of these games against Towns and Robinson, two big athletic guys that, again, Towns not a great defender, but they sort of know where to be on the floor. And then the rebounding aspect is going to be really interesting to me. Wembanyama still is not at the point where he's a dominant rebounder, and that could make a big difference. When you go back and look at the games these teams played, the two that Mitchell Robinson played, he was like +9, +10 in both of those games, and you could see a real meaningful impact. If you go back and watch, just his constant attack there is a really good way to distract Wembanyama defensively, keep him a little bit out of the way of what's going on and things. But yeah, at the end of the day, from a matchup perspective, I think the Knicks are ready here. I think that they are not going to be too concerned basically with what San Antonio is going to do. I think the wings for them, Ananobi and Bridges, are going to be really important in the series. And I think Towns' role is going to be huge. I think he's really going to force Wembanyama to work a lot on both ends of the floor. So I like the Knicks. I would have this closer to like Knicks +140, somewhere in that range. And I like them in six. Knicks 4-2, the exact price on that one's right around +500. I've already put both of those bets in.
Okay, let's get to some. Let's get to a prop, and let's get to the award of MVP. Let's start with a prop bet. What's your favorite prop bet on the board?
Yeah, love these series leader bets, and I think Jalen Brunson is being a little underpriced here in the market for most threes made in the series. Seeing that priced anywhere from +350 and higher all around. The leaders in the market, it's basically Champagne and Vassell, and then Brunson is kind of your third there. I would make Brunson kind of the favorite. Now, not in a dominant way. You know, I'm not telling you Brunson should be -150 or something, but I would have it a little closer to say Brunson +225, +250, kind of in that range, with Champagne and Vassell push behind. You look at the attempts, Brunson is basically even with those guys. The way I see this matchup, it's going to involve Brunson shooting a lot more threes, and Vassell and Champagne are going to have tougher defenders in this series with Bridges and Ananobi. I think really, honestly, spending a lot of time on both of those guys. So at 3-1, a little bit of a longer shot, but I would, again, have Brunson to be the favorite to make the most threes. +350 or better looks like a really good number.
All right, let's get to the NBA MVP finals market, which, you know, again, even on the run-up to this NBA Finals, you could bet this. This market was up most famously last week with OKC players, with San Antonio players, and obviously the Knicks players. And what we were saying was, hey, look, if it's San Antonio, it's a very thin path for anybody besides Wembanyama. We certainly saw that in the Western Conference Finals. You expect that that's the case in the NBA Finals as well, although I guess someone could make a case for someone else on the Spurs. The Knicks, though, everyone agrees. I mean, it's a free-for-all. Right, you got about three or four players, maybe even five in the mix there. Who did you land on?
Yeah, I like the way that you sort of describe that. I think a lot of people, when they approach these markets, think of, you know, Super Bowl MVP, where it's pretty much the two quarterbacks. And historically in the NBA, you've had these clear best players in each team. And I agree that Wembanyama for the Spurs is that guy. For the Knicks, it probably is Brunson. Honestly, if the Knicks win this series, like I think they can, Brunson is probably the guy, but at the prices we're being offered, Karl-Anthony Towns is being wildly underrated here. I think that there is a very reasonable version of this series where Wembanyama is great, but not great enough to get the Spurs kind of across the line. Brunson is very, very good, but what we remember game in and game out is the way that Towns was able to hang with Wembanyama, the way that offensively Towns shooting was able to drag Wembanyama away from the basket. Defensively, Towns was able to be on the court, be near Wembanyama. Maybe he gets taken advantage of a little bit, but he's not fouling out. The way the Towns rebounded and stuff, that, I think that's really the narrative that stands out here. Because you have to remember, guys, again, narrative award. This is something, there's like a dozen voters who vote on it in a 30-minute window when the game's actually finished. So think about who can make memories, and I think there is a very real scenario where the Knicks win, Towns is the guy we remember, and 20-1 or better is an incredible number.
I think you're probably right, though, just generally. I'm a Spurs ticket holder, but if the Knicks do win this series, isn't it because Towns just goes nuts from behind the arc?
Yeah, probably.
Wembanyama's pushed out. You can see that path
both,
for sure.
Both ends of the floor for him, yep. Making an impact.
Alex, appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Alex Noops Christensen, by the way. Spoon backwards in tribute to Clarence Weatherspoon. Didn't think we'd have a Clarence Weatherspoon mentioned in it. And yet, here we are. Country Club and next. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
20 leagues, one mission. Just win bets, baby, is your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. Scan the QR code on the screen or visit justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets Baby. The name says it all. Kelly Bidlin, former guest on the show as well.
That's right.
Before we get to Wes Reynolds, who's kind enough to join us for not one but two segments, you want to talk golf? You got some golf plays here, yeah? We didn't finish.
I don't have plays. I have a recap of the Charles Schwab Challenge. We've got long shots coming up this week. The Memorial, big one coming up. So Matt West and I will be recording that tomorrow. Looking ahead to that. Looking forward to that. Yeah, Charles Schwab Challenge ending up a disappointing tournament as I had that leaderboard peppered, man, all week. All week. J.J. Spahn, Alex Smalley looked like they could do it. The worst was I had a top five bet on J.J. Spahn. I didn't have one on Alex Smalley, and everybody's T5 heading to 18, and, of course, Alex Smalley makes a birdie to push J.J. Spahn out to sixth, so that was really fun. Top 20s hit for Smalley. Got a couple bets home, but Russell Henley goes and wins it in a playoff. Eric Cole was begging to give the tournament away. It was just nobody wanted to go out there and win the thing, except for Russell Henley, who stepped up at the end.
How often
pushes it to a playoff?
How often in our history has Eric Cole ever come up on a leaderboard?
A few times. He has not been great here recently. Yeah. He was a thing out of the pandemic. He got real hot. Won Rookie of the Year in 2023. Mm-hmm. One of the better putters on tour. You can drive the ball about as well as he can, though.
Who's the Rookie of the Year leader right now, would you say?
Ooh, that's a great question. I have no idea.
Let's bring Wes Reynolds in. Let's get somebody in here who actually knows a little something about golf in here. I'm sorry, I'm just joking.
Johnny Kiefer? I don't know.
Long Shots co-host Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin, and of course Matt Brown. Long Shots available wherever your podcasts are distributed. When do you guys put it out every day? Tuesdays?
Tuesdays. Evenings if you're on the East Coast. That's pretty much just evenings.
Period. Wes, who's the golf rookie of the year right now, would you say?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to remember who the rookies are because now guys get on the tour in different ways and get on the tour in different times. So,
I mean, does Blades Brown even count? Like he'd be up there.
He could, but I think he just accepted his special temporary tour membership. Like there's all these different terms for how these guys get on the tour, whether it's from the Corn Ferry or from the PGA Tour U, like Ludwig Gobert. That's how he got on the tour a couple of years ago. So Blades Brown probably would be, but I don't think we've had a rookie win. Just going right off memory here quickly, I don't think we've had a rookie win on the tour yet this year. So
that's my
probably
guy.
Still wide open, but Brown would be a candidate.
We actually have had a rookie win. It was Chris Rayton. I just looked it up. He's technically a rookie on the PGA Tour, so he did win. And Marco Penge,
that's my guy.
Your guy is hurt and taking some time off golf right now. So I don't think that one's looking so
good. Why is he taking some time
off? So it would be Rayton, because Rayton got on through the DP World Tour last year.
Yeah, Penge got hurt, right, Wes? He had a little injury, and then there was something. He was moving to the U.S., too, and I think that adjustment was becoming a little bit difficult for him as well.
Yeah.
Russell Henley wins the Charles Schwab Challenge in a playoff against Eric Cole. Did you have Henley, Wes?
Did not. Did not have Russell Henley. I miss timing these guys. I had him a couple weeks ago. And then, sometimes you get where it's like, do you go back to him or not? Or yeah. do you keep sticking with him? And Russell Henley, credit to him. And you mentioned Eric Cole. Like, this is not a course that you would think that Eric Cole would be successful at and would be the leader for most of the weekend, because he's kind of all over the place off the tee. And he can't be all over the place off the tee necessarily and win at Colonial. You got to be a fairway finder like Russell Henley is. And that's what he's one of the best at doing. So it's no surprise that like a Henley wins here. It was kind of a surprise that Cole was in the playoff here, because you would think he would struggle a little bit.
It's the Memorial this week. Then it's the RBC Canadian. Then it's the US Open. So we're 3 weeks away here, actually 2.5 weeks away, if you will, from our next major. Long Shots is out tomorrow. You'll have all your plays tomorrow, but any preliminary thoughts on the Memorial this week?
Yeah. At Jack's place, it's always a very good tournament. Some years it scores lower, some years it's a little bit more difficult, but Scottie Scheffler now back-to-back champion at the Memorial, trying to go for a three-peat here. You know, a couple guys that I want to stick with, he was never in contention, but I thought played pretty solidly. Kelly and I both had him. I'll probably go back to Justin Thomas here mm-hmm. at the Memorial. I think that the consistency is there. And, you know, he is certainly a guy we look at. Sepp Straka a little bit down the board. But you do have some former winners of this Memorial up there. Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay. Matt Fitzpatrick has had several very good finishes, top fives and top tens here. So looking forward to it. It's a little bit more of a classical tournament. It's Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin, Ohio, just outside of Columbus. So it is Jack Nicklaus's course. This is kind of his ode to Augusta. So you will see some similarities in terms of like the course layout and the agronomy and the different surfaces. You will see some similarities to Augusta here at the Memorial. So that's why you see the world number one, who's won at Augusta a couple times, Scottie Scheffler, and then Rory McIlroy, of course, who has won back to back. So the odds board makes perfect sense here.
Scottie Scheffler plus 285 to win at the Memorial. And we all agreed here last week, the three of us, we're about 6 weeks to 2 months away from the murmurings begin. If Scottie Scheffler doesn't win one of these, all of a sudden it's going to be a thing.
Yeah, this is, as Wes brought up, the history that he's had here recently. Wes, I don't know about you. On first glance, I think it's a little too baked into this price. Like, this is going to be a number I don't think I can bet Scottie Scheffler at this week, even though he's very winnable. Wes did mention the first guy who jumped out to me on the odds board was Justin Thomas as well. As long as he is, you find him about 48-1. I would expect that number comes crashing down here over the next 24 hours, but that one jumped out to me as well, Wes.
And then the U.S. Open?
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say him and, you know, Ludwig Aubert played solidly, didn't contend last week at the Memorial, but was kind of surfacing on that second page of the leaderboard. Treeline course. You know, is he finally mm-hmm. going to kind of win a big tournament out there? And he's been playing consistently, just hadn't been able to finish on Sunday. But this course should be like a perfect fit for him.
U.S. Open is in Shinnecock Hills, by the way, just projecting forward June 18th to the 21st. Again, just 17 days away. A course like that, explain that course to us or describe that course to us, and what golfer that we might not be thinking of might be suitable for that course.
Yeah, and we've seen Shinnecock, you know, every several years at the U.S. Open in Southampton, New York. So typical Northeast U.S. Open course. Going to play, you know, relatively long, not as long as like a Bethpage Black or a Wingfoot, but a lot of rough. You know, there actually are going to be defined levels of rough, unlike the PGA Championship a couple weeks ago, where you get the first cut, the intermediate cut, and then you get the deep jungle if you're way airing off the tee. So I like the grinders, man. I went 1-2 actually somehow several years ago with this, with Brooks Koepka and Tommy Fleetwood. Maybe history repeats itself. Certainly Brooks Koepka has been playing well in his limited starts on the tour. He's been driving the ball a little bit better. The irons have been tip-top shape. The putting has been a disaster for a couple years. But I think it's the U.S. Open. You're looking for grinders like we saw last year at Oakmont when J.J. Spahn kind of emerged from that pack of players that we're absolutely getting beat down by that course. He makes the long putt and puts it away. So, you know, you're typically, I'm not necessarily looking for bombers necessarily. I'm looking for guys that can grind, guys that can save par, guys that are good at scrambling and their chipping game and their short pitching game is in tip top shape. So that's what I'm typically looking for more than like, okay, they're long drivers off the tee or what have you. So I think you really got to take into account like all the short game stats a little bit more than you normally would on a week-to-week basis.
Refresh my memory, Wes, switching to baseball. Major League Baseball, you used to bet a lot more than you do now. Is that correct?
No, I still do, but I've been doing some pitcher props. But now we are getting into the summer. And if you watch baseball over the weekend, unders were very few and far between because now we're starting to get the temperatures warming up a little bit. So that's what you got to look at. I've been doing more pitcher props, I think, and a lot of that is looking at bullpen usage. You know, how are they rested? Do they want to stretch this guy out? And I think that that's how you determine, especially for like the recorded out stuff, a little bit with the strikeout stuff as well. And you really kind of, I think, got to look at markets a little bit. I'll give an example. The Miz, Jacob Mizorowski from the Brewers, he's been getting like 10 strikeouts, 9 strikeouts, 12 strikeouts. So they finally move it from 7.5 to like 8.5. And now he just barely went under. He went 8, and they maybe could have sent him out there another inning. But that's what you got to do, I think, with these things. When you get the market adjustments, that's when you maybe want to play a different way with some of these guys instead of just riding the streak. So I've been doing a lot more like pitcher props. Hitter props, I think, are a lot of variance, so I don't really mess with those as much.
Pitcher props, just because the variance is you feel like you can wrap your arms around that, not as many moving parts as betting a full baseball game or a 5-inning bet, 5-inning side or total. I understand a lot of, you're not the first to gravitate towards that. I know Todd Wishnev does that every day with pitcher props. A lot of serious baseball bettors have landed on that. Wes does have a college baseball play. There are 5 games, maybe 6, but 5 games at least scheduled to determine the remaining 5 super regional spots. Wes has a play in one of them. We'll talk NBA Finals with him as well. Maybe some Stanley Cup. I don't know. See if Wes has thoughts on that. And his thoughts on the Earth, Wind, and Fire doc coming out on HBO Max next on A Numbers Game right here at VSiN.